many of these tragedies in the past few years. And each time I learn the news, I react not as a president, but as anybody else would, as a parent. And that was especially true today. I know there's not a parent in America who doesn't feel the same overwhelming grief that I do. The majority of those who died today were children. Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old. They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. Among the fallen were also teachers, men and women who devoted their lives to helping our children fulfill their dreams. So our hearts are broken today for the parents and grandparents, sisters and brothers of these little children, and for the families of the adults who were lost. Our hearts are broken for the parents of the survivors as well. For as blessed as they are to have their children home tonight, they know that their children's innocence has been torn away from them too early, and there are no words that will ease their pain. As a country, we have been through this too many times. Whether it's an elementary school in Newton or a shopping mall in Oregon or a temple in Wisconsin or a movie theater in Aurora or a street corner in Chicago, these neighborhoods are our neighborhoods and these children are our children. And we're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics. This evening, Michelle and I will do what I know every parent in America will do, which is hug our children a little tighter, and we'll tell them that we love them, and we'll remind each other how deeply we love one another. But there are families in Connecticut who cannot do that tonight, and they need all of us right now. In the hard days to come, that community needs us to be at our best as Americans, and I will do everything in my power as president to help.
By now, many of you have heard these words of President Obama. He said them a few days. Actually, he said them the day of the massacre at Sandy Hook. It's a few days ago now. And he's right that the parents of Sandy Hook, Connecticut, the way Obama and all of you who are parents, luckily, can do tonight. By now, you know the statistics. 20 children dead, all in first grade, age 6 or 7. Kids who President Obama said, of course, will never get a chance to live, well, even to see second grade, much less the full lives to which one would think they would deserve. 6 adults murdered at the school. Brave teachers and a principal, women who ran toward danger rather than away from it. We often talk about the brave first responders, the police officers and firefighters and people in the military who run toward danger rather than away from it. And of course, I salute their bravery. But these were teachers, just as brave, arguably braver. Unlike our men in the military and our police officers, they don't wear bulletproof vests. They're not trained to combat gunfire. As brave as our firefighters and police officers are, these teachers took an even greater risk. But they were no match for a Bushmaster 223 wielded by a disturbed 20-year-old man, just barely out of being a boy himself, who had just shot his own mother that day, and when he heard the police sirens, took his own life. making a total of 8 adults dead. The gun which he used to shoot everyone was not the 2 handguns that he brought. Every bullet fired was from the Bushmaster 223, a semi-automatic assault weapon with gun clips, at least 30 bullets. But we all know that they're gun clips that can hold up to 100 now. Those were the ones used in Aurora to shoot down movie theater goers. Excuse me for not fully welcoming you this evening the way I normally do. This is Mark Levine. I am always honored to speak with you. But I'm upset. I'm still upset. I know it occurred a few days ago. I'm still upset. I hope you are too. Because the weapon that was fired by the disturbed young man was banned from 1994 to 2004. Was banned under Bill Clinton and the Democrats in Congress until George Bush and the Republicans said, let the ban expire. People need semi-automatic weapons. Why do people need semi-automatic weapons? What are semi-automatic weapons? Some people who are firm supporters of arming every last baby in America point out that semi-automatic weapons aren't fully automatic weapons. They're not machine guns. You do have to pull the trigger every time you can shoot. I don't know about you, but I can move. I'm just looking right now at my first finger. I think I moved it about 10 times in that second. I'll bet you could as well. And it would be very easy to move it 60 times in a minute. In fact, a police officer informs me that semi-automatic weapons are more powerful and more dangerous than machine guns. Why? Because machine guns, fully automatic guns, the kind where you pull the lever and you hold it down and it keeps shooting, they exhaust their clips in 3 to 4 seconds. They go through 100 clips in 4 seconds, but then you're done. But a semi-automatic weapon, wow, that's just perfect for killing people. Because you can shoot a few kids here, shoot a child here. Oop, here comes a teacher. Let's give her 10 bullets to the head. And hey, might as well kill some cops too. Now, he didn't actually get around to killing the cops. He was too busy shooting little children. The Connecticut medical examiner said of the 7 children he examined, they had each of them between 3 and 11 bullets. Each! Inside them. 11 bullets in one child. The minimum bullets were 3. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords thankfully has survived a shot in the head. Almost a miracle. Imagine if she had 3 shots. Or 11. And she were a 6-year-old girl. These weapons, the Bushmaster 223, and similar weapons were designed for the military. They are military-grade weapons. That's what they call them. They were designed in Vietnam to shoot as many Vietnamese, Viet Cong, as possible. And whatever you think of the Vietnam War, using these military weapons on 6-year-olds should disgust you. Whatever your feelings are about the Second Amendment, whatever your feelings are about guns in America, if it doesn't make you want to vomit, if it doesn't make you angry, if it doesn't depress you beyond all full measure of depression, to see a semi-automatic assault weapon unloaded on a group of 6-year-olds, then you have no heart. You have no soul. You're not fully human, in my view. Now, I know what the people who love their guns will say. They will say that they are also horrified, as they should be, as all normal human beings should be. They are also sickened by this massacre. But that banning these guns wouldn't stop the massacre. They'd get them anyway. And besides, this is just one step towards banning all guns in America. Well, I am not making an argument for banning all guns in America. I understand the legitimate need of hunters. I understand the legitimate need of self-defense. But when it comes to semi-automatic weapons with 30 or 100 bullets in a clip, when it comes, by the way, to hollow point bullets that he used, what's a hollow point bullet? Well, a regular bullet, a normal bullet, is pretty hard, and it goes right through you. That's what went through Gabby Giffords. And it goes in one part, and it keeps has so much power, it goes out another part of your body. And it can certainly disable you. It's great for self-defense. But oftentimes, regular bullets don't kill, you see, because they enter a hole, they leave a hole, they cause damage in the holes they leave, and maybe an organ or two in the middle. But that's about it. Hollow point bullets were designed for something else. Hollow point bullets were designed to deform themselves naturally after they enter a human body. Unlike regular bullets that have the decency once going in to often leave the scene, hollow point bullets stay and continue to destroy tissue and organs. You might survive an ordinary bullet. It's a lot harder to survive a hollow point bullet. And surviving 11 hollow point bullets when you're a 6-year-old girl, well, let's just say your chances are bleak. Now, I've talked with some police officers about hollow point bullets because I'm not even sure they should have them. But they tell me that in certain very rare circumstances, such as when you're trying to do a sharpshooter, you're trying to shoot a gunman in the middle of a crowd, you might want the hollow point bullet to shoot the gunman, and it doesn't go through the gunman and hit someone else in the crowd. So I recognize there may well be some legitimate uses of hollow point bullets for police officers and the military. Though I have to tell you, I'm not so sure they're always useful for police officers. If you're just trying to disable one man coming after you, a regular bullet will do. But okay, fine. They have some legitimate uses for military officers and police officers. And if you enjoy shooting a semi-automatic weapon, if you love that target practice, that you get a thrill from that, then do me a favor. Join the military. Join the police. Do something good for society, and then you can get your thrills out of shooting your guns, but also you can be helpful to society. And if you just enjoy your guns for target practice, well, let me tell you something. Prior to 2004, the maximum number of bullets in a clip was 10. You shoot 10 rounds at the target, and then you got to take a few seconds to reload. Oh no, 5 seconds to reload, 10 more bullets. 5 seconds to reload, 10 more bullets. Now, target practice people may think that's too much time. Actually, if you're good at it, you can reload in 2 seconds. They don't have those 2 seconds. But those 2 seconds can save dozens of lives in a single incident. Many know that the crazy man who shot Gabby Giffords, in the 2 seconds he took to reload after his 30-bullet magazine, was time enough for people to jump him and save another 30 people from being shot. There are reasonable gun control measures that should be done, and we need to do them now. This is Mark Levine. If you call in, whether you agree or disagree, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine talking about sensible gun control. If you're a hunter and you need more than 10 bullets to kill a deer, I say the deer gets a free walk because you're not a very good hunter. There are reasonable things we can do without banning guns to prevent these kinds of massacres like the one that happened in Sandy Hook. Michael, line 4 from the Bronx. I'm pretty sure you agree. How are you, sir?
Hey, yes, I do agree. I will go a step further. You know, these right-wingers want to be worried about saying, you know, they're going to take our guns away. They're going to take our guns away. Well, you know, maybe I should make like Big Daddy and say, perhaps we should take your guns away because apparently you guys seem to have difficulty knowing the difference between the right to bear arms and just arbitrarily shooting people, shooting at things. You know, the thing is that...
I'll tell you this, Michael. I want to be clear here, though. I am not arguing to take away all guns. I'm really not making that argument. And my argument
is... No, I know
is,
you're not.
And I'm not even arguing that most gun owners... I actually think most gun owners are responsible. What I'm saying is there's certain guns, namely semi-automatic assault weapons, certain weapons clips, namely those that have more than 10 bullets in them, certain bullets, namely hollow point bullets. There's certain things that hunters can't use. Hunters tell me they can't use. And people can't... Ordinary people can't adequately use them for self-defense. And if you're not in the military, you're not in the police force, there's no reason to own these things, even if you're a responsible gun owner. That's what I'm saying.
I know that, Mark. I know that. And I'm saying that I was just taking a step further. I was just saying this to teach everybody a lesson. The thing is that when you have somebody like Sarah Palin saying, don't retreat, reload. When you have Michelle Bachmann saying, I want you all armed and dangerous. When you have Sharon Angle, if you remember her, when she was asked, what happens if you don't, if you lose this election? She says, well, we always have Second Amendment remedies. I mean, it's like, what in the world is this that people want to misuse the First Amendment and the Second Amendment to carry forth their agenda, and it's all about control and disregarding of people's rights, people's livelihoods, people's safety, people's lives. I am like, no, just like the way an adult or a parent try to teach their children a certain lesson. You know,
here's the lesson, Michael. You know, people, conservatives claim to support states' rights. Well, let's just do states' rights. In Montana, they're never going to ban guns. But if Connecticut wants to ban guns, they should have a right to do so. And the sad thing is that the Supreme Court is basically saying, ah, no, you know what? Everyone has a right to a semi-automatic assault weapon. I don't think it's true, and I think we can bring back the ban. 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. What are your thoughts on reasonable gun control? Back after this. Common sense gun control. This is Mark Levine, and this is what I'm arguing for. Common sense gun control. No, I'm not going to ban your guns, and I'm not going to take them away. Don't worry, people. Don't worry, hunters. People interested in self-defense. Here's what I want to stop. Here's what I want to ban. I'll be very, very clear. I want to ban semi-automatic weapons, also known as assault weapons. I want to ban magazines that carry more than 10 bullets. I want to ban hollow point bullets. And I want to prevent, or insist, I should say, require a background check for anyone buying a gun. Now, to be clear, I still think police officers and military, sharpshooters, you know, working for SEAL Team 6, obviously, I believe that people in a well-regulated environment like a police force or the military or a SEAL team should have access to all of these weapons and bullets. But semi-automatic weapons, let's just take the arguments one by one. Let's just take them one by one. Because I think there are three legitimate reasons to have a weapon. One is if you're in the military police force, we already discussed that. Two is for hunters. And three is for self-defense. Let's talk about hunting. I'm not against hunting. I admit that I wouldn't enjoy it myself. I don't particularly enjoy killing things. I have gone fishing from time to time, but even as a kid, it kind of bugged me. But hey, I eat meat. I'm no vegetarian. I ain't perfect. I'm not claiming I am. I have no problem with hunters. It's part of the American tradition. I'm not arguing against hunting. But a semi-automatic weapon, if you need more than 10 bullets to hit a deer, I think the deer should get a free walk home. Hunting is supposed to be a sport. It's not supposed to be a massacre. Shooting fish in a barrel is not something to be proud of because it's very easy to do. So go out, hunters. Get your long rifle. Get that deer in the sights. Frankly, the longer rifles are more accurate anyway. Take a shot, maybe a second one, and if the deer gets away, you know what? Go after another deer. I'll tell you this. If you riddled a deer with as many bullets as Adam Lanza riddled first graders, you wouldn't want to eat that meat anyway. And if you shot its head 10 times, you wouldn't want it as a trophy on your wall. Semi-automatic weapons shooting more than 10 bullets are simply not useful for hunters. If you're going after birds, get a shotgun. Those pellets don't do as much damage to a human being. Heck, Dick Cheney shot someone with one. I defy you. You show me where a semi-automatic weapon with a more than 10 capacity magazine is good for hunting. Come on, hunters. Explain it to me. And also explain to me why hunters need hollow point bullets. If you're trying to eat meat, I think you'd want a bullet to go through the animal, not lodge in there. Particularly if you don't like the taste of bullets. Why should anyone outside the police or the military have a hollow point bullet? Oh yeah, and gun shows. If we require background checks, which we do, for licensed gun dealers, and if anyone's against that, let me know. The database is set up. You call in a toll-free number. Why not require it for everyone? Unless you firmly believe that mentally ill people or ex-felons or violent ex-killers or people who beat up their wives, unless you think people with violent or crazy tendencies should have guns, in which case I think you may be crazy, what is wrong with requiring someone to call an 800 number before they sell a gun? Heck, we require more than that when you sell a car. We also require more when you buy a car. When you buy a car, or when you get a driver's license, there's a test. There's a written test and there's a driving test. Because we understand that cars, if used wrongly, can kill people. That's not what they're designed for. They're designed to take you places. But yeah, cars can kill you. But guns? Guns are designed to kill. I think we should require at least as much training to own a gun as we do to own a car. And I don't think that's too much to ask. One last argument, and I've been tweeting back and forth, and folks, come tweet at me. I'm going to read your tweets. I'll read them on the air. Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. I've been reading your tweets. And one of the most ridiculous tweets I get, but I get it often, is, well, the bad guys, they're gonna get the guns anyway. A guy by the name of Conservative said, let even the bad guys have guns because they will anyway. So I responded to this so-called conservative. So you're saying let Osama bin Laden have guns? Really? All right, I've talked about hunting. Let's talk about self-defense. Okay, all right. I don't need a semi-automatic with 100 bullet capacity magazine for hunting. I don't need hollow point bullets for hunting. All right, okay, fine. But what about for self-defense? By the way, I don't know how many people defend the crazies and the felons not getting background checks, because presumably you don't want crazies or felons either hunting or claiming guns for self-defense. So I don't understand why the National Rifle Association firmly opposes background checks. Because if you oppose background checks, you are saying, in effect, I want it to be legal for crazy people to have guns. And if you believe that, I think you're crazy. But apart from the background checks, let's look at self-defense. Maybe you need these things for self-defense. Well, let's talk about hollow point bullets. Yeah, they're more likely to kill your attacker. But if the goal is self-defense, if the goal is not revenge or maiming or murder, if the goal is to protect yourself, an ordinary bullet will knock someone down. You don't need the hollow point bullet. If they're coming after you, an ordinary bullet should do just fine. Well, okay, fine. We don't need hollow point bullets, but we might need a semi-automatic weapon for self-defense. One person just wrote in. Let me get the quote here. Eric writes in, reloading while under... Oh, I had asked the question, how many first graders have to die because gun nuts are too lazy to reload at target practice because it takes a few seconds to reload if the gun magazines are limited to 10 bullets, which they used to be before 2004. And Eric says, reloading while under attack means death. Honest American gun owners are not evil. We handle guns correctly. I don't dispute that honest American gun owners are not evil and handle guns correctly. And in fact, I think it's a tautology. You know, A equals A, something that you assume to be true and therefore is true. Right? He uses the word honest, I assume, to mean responsible. I mean, Adam Lanza, for all we know, wasn't a liar. Right? He was honest, maybe. I don't know. I don't care. What he means, Eric means, when he says honest, is he means people who handle guns responsibly are not evil and handle guns responsibly. Well, I agree that people who handle guns responsibly handle guns responsibly. I agree that cheese is cheese. I agree that good people are good people. I also agree that the statement is meaningless. To say that good people are good and evil people are evil is merely to restate what you just assumed. But let's look at the first sentence he said. Eric says, reloading while under attack means death. Now, to be fair, if you are fighting in Afghanistan or Iraq or Vietnam, if you're in the military and you've got a swarm of 20 people coming at you with guns, yeah, reloading while under attack means death, which is why I am fine with our military having fully automatic machine guns, having semi-automatic machine guns with 100-bullet clips. Heck, I'm fine with our military having bombs and drones and get them before they get us. And I'm hardly a pacifist when it comes to Al-Qaeda or any terrorists for that matter. Check out some of my other shows. Fight fire with fire. Sure, reloading while under attack means death if you're in the military and possibly if you're in the police. A little less likely. Usually there's one or two or three suspects, but hey, it happens. You might have 10 suspects. I'm even okay with the police. But how many times does an ordinary person for self-defense, not a bodyguard, not a police officer, why do they need more than 10 bullets? I don't know. Give me the scenario. More than 10 people come at you at once? Or you shoot someone 10 times and you miss all 10 times and they keep coming? I'll tell you something. If you shoot someone 10 times and you miss 10 times and they keep coming at you, probably they're going to grab your gun and shoot you with it. So I really have a hard time understanding why an ordinary person for self-defense needs more than 10 bullets in a magazine. I could see how if a bunch of cops are out to get you, you would need to have more than 10 bullets in a magazine because it's very hard to fend off 10, 20 people coming at you without reloading. I accept that. But if 10 or 20 people are coming at you, you're probably not acting in self-defense. Right? Come on. I think most reasonable gun owners can recognize that these are reasonable things. Michael, real quick, because I want to get to Ken from Joliet as well. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, so Mark, I just want to make clear, I was just being sarcastic while I was making those statements before.
Okay.
I'm totally in agreement with you.
Fair enough.
What you're theming and what you're summing up is responsibility. All right? If I understand you correctly, it's about not just common sense, but being responsible in terms of gun ownership, of handling guns, what you're doing with them, and, of course, most importantly, why I keep connecting the doggone rhetoric. And when you have a systemic pattern of these massacres going on, and the shooter's always been labeled as a deranged individual, deranged individual, deranged individual.
It's assuming what the facts, like the guy that says that responsible gun owners are responsible. Well, I'm sure responsible gun owners are responsible,
right.
And I'm assumed that anyone who would shoot 20 first graders is deranged. But that doesn't solve my problem. That just calls
what
you've already seen has happened, and then you say in hindsight, oh, yeah, I guess the guy was deranged. He shot 27 innocent people. I guess he was deranged. But yeah, that doesn't solve our problem.
But what's always preceding that? What is always preceding that? The rhetoric of violence and hate coming from these people, then which I would say on my honor, that is the type of rhetoric that incites these mentally deranged people.
I hear
now, right wingers cannot have it both ways. Either the guy who pulls the trigger is responsible, and you're saying he's sound mind to make his own decisions, or he is mentally deranged and is incited by somebody who is just inspired by the kind of rhetoric.
Or he's just mentally deranged and not incited by anybody. But what I say is we shouldn't make it legal to sell guns to the mentally deranged. I got to let you go, Michael, though, because I got to go to another caller. Ken from Joliet, Illinois, welcome to the show.
I'd like to preface my statement. I'd like to make two comments, actually. The second about guns, but the first about, the attack in Connecticut and the one in the Batman movie and the one at Columbine.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was a upper middle class white kid like them. Okay.
Okay.
I did not marry a white woman.
Okay.
Okay. So my kids are not as white as I am.
Okay.
And they're in the class of people that are getting killed all around this country. Okay.
Yep.
And nobody gives a damn until it's some bunch of, you know, rich white kids in, you know, some suburb in Connecticut or some rich suburb of Colorado, you know.
Well, I care about all of them. Let me just say this. President Obama was very clear, not only to mention Aurora and Sandy Hook, but also to mention kids gunned down in the streets of Chicago, and I was very glad he mentioned them as well. But go ahead.
Okay. Now, on the guns, I've got every single one of the guns that you hate.
Okay. Why?
You know, I've got an AK.
Okay. Why?
Actually, I have four of them.
You're not a police officer or in the military, sir? Ken, you're not a police officer or in the military?
Oh.
Okay. Why do you have an AK-47?
Because I'm in my 60s, and frankly, I'm not a very good shot. But, you know, with 30 rounds with an AK, somebody comes through this door, they ain't going anywhere.
And you think it's likely someone will come through that door?
I've been burglarized before.
Okay.
In fact, my 15-year-old daughter, when I lived in a different town, someone broke into the basement through the basement window. It was either one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Okay? And she had been taught by her brother how to use a pistol.
Okay. And a pistol didn't scare away burglars?
Yeah, that pistol scared away burglars.
Okay.
Because she shot the pistol through the door.
Okay.
And
I'm for having pistols being legal. Right. So tell me why the
AK-47. This particular pistol held 18 rounds of bullets, too.
But she didn't need to shoot 18 rounds, did she, to scare the burglars away? She just needed one or maybe two.
No, she just shot a couple times, you know. And then she heard running, and they were on the way out, and they didn't stay around to rape and kill her.
Exactly. You know? And I want to be clear here. I am not for banning pistols. I agree that a pistol can be used for self-defense or a rifle. My argument is that you don't need more than 10 rounds without reloading. You could still reload 3 seconds later if you really need to. But that these kinds of weapons, the kind that shoot 30 or 100 bullets, are far more likely to end up in the hands of madmen who shoot children than in the hands of your daughter fighting away burglars. Ken, I got to take a break. If you want to stay on and continue this discussion, I'm more than happy to do it. It'll be at the top of the hour. I'm not turning you off, but I got to turn you off for now because I got to take a break. 888-653-7543. Back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine, heavy Twitter discussion at Mark Levine Talk. We will get back to our talk about gun control, but first, let's talk to the Talk Radio News Service with former Congressman Bob Ney. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. What's the news?
Well, we can talk about gun control.
There you go.
Among some things. gun control, fiscal cliff, I call them fiscal cliff notes, and also the third thing is Benghazi. But
all right.
The president made his statement today,
right.
And he's given it 30 days, you know, the scoop on that. I just want to give you, on another side of the issue, something interesting, I think. Congressman Jack Kingston, a Republican from down in Georgia, had made a statement about willing to discuss the issue, adding in mental health issues and also some violence with video games. So the reason I mention that, I think on this entire issue, it's not just going to be a strict debate, gun control or not, which has happened in the past. It's going to be a broader-based debate at the end of the day.
Well, that's good. We need a debate on mental health.
I think it's good, yeah.
There's no problem with that. I mean, and I would think that Democrats and Republicans could come together, if on nothing else, with the idea that everyone who buys a gun should undergo a background check so we don't have crazy people getting guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all right, go to fiscal.
Have to adjust some laws for it, but I think
sure. That's what I've been arguing for this whole hour. Tell me what's going on with the fiscal cliff, because it looks like Boehner and Obama were close to an agreement, but now Boehner has a plan B.
He has a plan B, which baffled me today, frankly, about what it gained him in doing this. And from his point of view, he's going to bring it to a vote. It takes away a leverage point that the president has, which is fine and dandy, and there was a weird twist today. Grover Norquist, who's, you know, the godfather of no taxes,
right.
said, well, I give you a dispensation today, you know.
Like the Pope.
So he did the I'm a Catholic, he did the cross thing and everybody's...
But Bob, this is pure politics. I mean, look, I understand pure politics. Hey, I used to work in Washington, you understand it more than I do.
Sure.
But why didn't he do this political move 2-3 weeks ago when was the time to play politics, rather than 2 days before Christmas when people are trying to actually reach a deal before they leave town?
I can answer that one because he thought he had, you know, look, for years I was out there, Grover Norquist said no, 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 and everybody went, okay, yes, yes, yes. And he was losing them. He was losing them on this issue. So, you know, rather than have the big loss, you do the kind of, well, I went along with this deal. But at the end of the day, the IRS is preparing for, you know, maybe late tax problems. I mean, this whole thing can be a complete nightmare. So I still think it's possible that after Boehner makes this move, Harry Reid will have to do something in the Senate, you know, whether it's opposite or whatever. That might start the ball game rolling where Boehner and Obama come to some type of deal. They were only $200 billion off. I know that sounds like only $200 billion,
but I'm sorry, but our time is up. Thank you. Listen, I just hope they come to a deal soon because, as far as I'm concerned, they don't have much time left. 888-653-7543. We'll get back to gun control. And my question is, why can't we take reasonable measures? This is Mark Levin, back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levin. You're going to be hearing from Leslie at the top of the next hour. I do not know her topic, but if you're missing Leslie, you will hear from her. In the meantime, you've got me. As I said, this is Mark Levin, and I'm talking about guns. Because the president's talking about guns. Because the country's talking about guns. Because 20 first graders are dead. 6 heroic teachers, well, 5 teachers and a principal, are dead. 1 unfortunate mother, who apparently wasn't a gun enthusiast herself, thought that she could buy a Bushmaster 223 for self-defense. She felt like, well, honestly, she felt like my caller, who I have a lot of respect for, so please don't take this the wrong way, sir, but Ken from Joliet, Illinois, who said that he's a bad shot, he needs more than 10 bullets for self-defense. Well, Nancy Lanza thought so too, sir, and she's dead with her own gun. I think these weapons are more likely to cause damage than good, but I know you disagree, and I had to cut you off before, so I'll definitely let you finish what you had to say. Go ahead, sir. Ken from Joliet, are you still there? Oh, we lost him. Okay, see if we can get him back, because I was enjoying that discussion. And my point is that even if you think they're good for self-defense, that's exactly what Nancy Lanza thought. She thought she could get closer to her son, who, by all accounts, was obscenely quiet and not very interactive with people. He had Asperger's syndrome, although, to be fair, most people with Asperger's syndrome are victims. They tend to harm themselves before they harm others, but Obviously, Adam Lanza was different. But she tried to connect with her son by taking him to target practice. And for reasons that we may never know, Adam Lanza used first graders as target practice. All right, Ken is gone. Sorry about that. Let's go on to Troy from Long Island on line four. Hi, Troy. How are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, what are your thoughts on sensible gun control? Yeah, I want to be clear. I'm not for banning guns. I am for banning semi-automatic assault weapons, high-capacity magazines, and hollow-point bullets. You agree or disagree?
Well, I agree with you on that. The issue that that people talk about, you need these semi-automatics for self-defense. How many murders are the reason or result of self-defense?
Yeah.
Not that many, right?
Not that many.
So that means that the people for self-defense, really, we're not really trying to arm people for self-defense. We're trying to get the guns out of people's hands who are just committing reckless murders because they have a gun.
Here's the thing about the semi-automatics, and then actually I think Ken from Gillette, Illinois, was a perfect example. He was a reasonable man. We disagreed, but he was saying he wants a semi-automatic for self-defense, and yet he conceded that when burglars came in his home, his 50-year-old daughter got rid of them with a pistol and one shot.
Exactly.
So I'm not for banning all guns. I don't think most liberals are, by the way, for banning all guns. Well, you know, the NRA says they're going to take your guns away. I'm just saying that military-grade weapons should be left to the military. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And there should be also a much, much stricter regulation of how these guns get to these streets. I mean, we have millions of guns on the street. Why are these manufacturers making so many guns? Why are these guns being made in such a large mass? Why are there so many on the street? There's so many illegal guns on the street that it's ridiculous. And how do they get there?
Because they're making huge profits. That's why. You know what's funny, Troy? If you design a children's toy, a doll. You design a doll for little girls. And let's say the head can come off and get stuck in a child's throat, all right, and some child chokes that way. You could be sued. You could be sued for hundreds of thousands of dollars because you designed a doll and some kid stuck the doll in her throat. And, you know, I understand that's what two-year-olds do. And I'm not against suing that doll manufacturer. But then you have gun manufacturers, and they're not selling dolls that can be accidentally stuck in a kid's throat. They're selling weapons and bullets that are designed to murder as many people as possible, as easily as possible. And guess what? You can't sue them for that. I think if manufacturers could be sued as easily as doll manufacturers are sued, if gun manufacturers actually knew that they sold to a crazy person and the crazy person shot someone, they would be liable for the costs of the funeral and the life of the person who's lost. I would bet they would be much more careful about who they sold guns to.
I believe that so, and I believe that I think that all these guns, that every gun that is made and released from any manufacturer, their serial number should go straight to the government, and the government should keep track of the guns, where they're going, and how many are leaving your warehouse.
I agree.
Where they're going.
I mean, look, you know, we register cars. Every car in the United States of America has a license plate and a registration. If you drive without a license plate, you're pulled over and you're cited. And you're forced to get a license plate. And you know what? No one seems to complain. Big brother government knows where all our cars are. You know what? It's just a fact of life. Cars can kill people. They're not designed to kill people like guns, but they do kill people. So if someone has a hit and run, you got to be able to say, I saw the license plate, officer.
Exactly.
It was this. Guns, even more so, have got to be registered for the same reason we register cars.
Right, and one person should only be allowed maybe one or two guns at a time.
Yeah,
and not even you don't need three guns for self defense. You can't use them all at the same time.
Right,
and if you got three semi-automatics and you can't defend off somebody, then there's a problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. If you are buying three guns at once and you're not in the military or a cop or a collector or something like that. The question is, you're right. You can only use one gun at a time. The only reason you could have three guns is if maybe you're going on a killing spree and one gun jams, you need another. But that's not a good enough reason to go and buy a gun. I'll tell you something. No. In my home state of Virginia, we used to have a policy before the Republicans took over of saying you could buy one gun a month. So the collectors, all right, you're a gun collector. You could go ahead and get your gun a month. But if you want to go and buy two, three, four, five guns at a clip, and you're not a cop, I just happen to think you're probably not using them for the right reasons.
Yeah. I think that a lot of things need to change with the law because too many kids are getting killed for stray bullets, too many people are getting killed for no reason, and too many guns in the wrong people's hands. And, you know, we have to, the government and the president, they have to, like, you know, say, you know, they got to make decisions that are going to offend people. You know, that's what being a leader is about. Sometimes you don't make decisions that are always going to be, you know, it's what somebody wants to hear. But that's why you're in charge.
I hear you, Troy. So you go ahead and you call your member of Congress. You call your two senators. I would think both your New York senators, are Schumer and Gillibrand, I'm sure, are pretty strong on this issue. But call your local congressman. I think everyone needs to do this. And if you like your guns, I'm not going to take them away. I promise. No one's going to come and take your guns away. All right? Yeah. But I'm saying that an AK-47, it's just not necessary for hunting or self-defense. Thanks for your call, Troy.
Definitely not.
Appreciate it. Let me go to Mike in Philadelphia. I don't know whether he agrees or disagrees, but he's going to tell me in a minute. Line one. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good.
First-time listener. I'm enjoying your show.
Oh, thank you.
And I agree on you with you a lot of things, but not everything you said.
You disagree here.
There's a couple of things. First of all, the registration of weapons, the states can do that. The federal government will never be able to do that. It's forbidden by the Constitution.
Whoa. Hold on. Stop right there. I'll let you make your other argument in a second, but I am a constitutional lawyer. Are you telling me it's forbidden under the Second Amendment or some other way?
No, not under the Second Amendment. No.
Okay. How do you say it's unconstitutional for the federal government to register guns?
For the federal, first of all, I'll back up one second because I misspoke a little bit.
Okay.
They register it the first time it's sold. Well, I think one of the problems is that they lose track of it after it's sold the first time.
But they don't have to. I mean, you know how car registration works, right? You go, you get a new car, and you buy from the car dealership, and they register right there. But if you resell it, you've got a title, and you sign it over to the next person. And the government has a record of a car registration. It can be sold 23 times, and the government knows where that car is. If we can do it with cars, why can't we do it with guns?
I live in Pennsylvania. I can sell a gun to another Pennsylvanian resident on the street, and our state law says we don't need to do a background check.
I know it says that, but I'm against that. I know what the current law is. I'm not arguing you're breaking the law if you sell a gun without a background check. I'm arguing it should be illegal to sell a gun without a background check.
I don't disagree with you there. What I disagree with is whether or not the government should keep stockpiles of records of who owns guns.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike. How do you feel about the government keeping stockpiles of records, which they currently do, about who owns cars? Does that bother you at some fundamental? Does that scare you, your liberty?
No, it doesn't. And it probably scares me because it's a change. It's not that, it's not something they've done in the past.
I've never seen the government misuse the fact that they know where everybody's car is. I haven't seen anybody, I just haven't seen them misuse this information. And I don't think they would misuse it with guns. I mean, I know there are people who really believe the government will say, all right, turn over your guns, round them up. But, how are they going to do it? I mean, there are 300 million guns in America. Are they going to stop, 50 million lawful gun owners and say, turn in your guns? And they'd have to have a law to do that, right? I don't see where registration is the harm. I mean, if you want to argue about other things, we can. But I just don't see the danger in registration.
Let me ask you this. I wanted to get your opinion on something else.
Okay.
On how our prohibitions against things have typically turned out for us in the past.
You're right about that. Listen, I am against most drug prohibitions. I would legalize marijuana. I certainly think prohibition was a bad idea. But at some point, I recognize that there are substances. This, totally apart from guns, there are substances that are so dangerous that I'm willing to risk prohibition. Sarin, anthrax, nuclear, a dirty bomb, arsenic. I'm okay with banning arsenic, except for, it has certain uses that for scientists and so forth. So I think that if you take a something like marijuana or alcohol that most people use for pleasure and don't misuse it, I'm not for banning that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even ban cigarettes, and I hate cigarettes.
look how that has impacted society by banning it. It's cost more money to enforce that law, and more lives have been lost.
I agree that that's true for alcohol and marijuana.
But I think for guns, what's going to happen is it's going to open up an entire... If you're a gun owner, which I am, the last time they banned assault weapons, it only opened up in a huge black market for the old parts, the guns, the older guns that were pre-banned.
Yeah, but Mike, the gun crimes with those types of guns went down. Let me give you an example. Machine guns, fully automatic machine guns, have been banned since the 1930s in America. Prior to that time, during the Prohibition era that you talked about, we had bootleggers who would, Machine Gun Kelly, right? They would shoot each other with these machine guns, and there are these massive killings in Chicago and elsewhere. I got to tell you something. I cannot recall a single death, murder by machine gun since the 1930s in America.
I do believe they were banned in 1986, not in 1936.
I'll check that.
Because Charlie Rangel was the one that took the vote on that ban. That was the Democrat.
All right, I'll check that. I may be wrong. I'll check that. Go ahead, though.
Yeah.
But your point your point is there'd be more weapons if we ban them?
No, what I think is going to happen is you're going to end up causing an underground market where you really lose track of everything by banning them, as opposed to keeping them legal and making, to your point, more of a I don't know about record keeping, but at least doing the background checks on everybody and having them out in the open. Once you put them underground, you'll have no track over who has them. That's my fear.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But now you're saying that you're coming around to my view that at least register them.
Well, at least for certain types of weapons. I don't know that I want. I guess I'm a little leery on it, but I can go with an assault weapon being registered. You know.
Okay. All right. Well, we're coming to some agreement, and that's sort of the part of the point. I think instead of sort of yelling at each other and accusing each other of things, that there is reasonable gun control. I think liberals have to give up on the idea of banning guns, although I have to say I don't think many people want to ban all guns, but I'm sure there are some who do. And at the same time, conservatives have to say, well, okay, maybe we should register guns. So I think there's some middle ground here. If you want to stick around, Mike, you're welcome to. I got to take a quick break, but I'll get back to you if you want. And you can also call in, folks, 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. Back after this. Welcome back to the show. I looked up when machine guns were first banned. They were first banned in 1934, as I said. There was another law banning them in 1968. I should say that Mike from Philadelphia is right that there was another law banning them in 1986. And I fully admit that I have not read these laws and I'm an expert exactly as to the differences among these laws. I apologize for that. If you care about those details, look them up and let me know on my website. Just post it at marklevinetalk.com. But my point is that they were the first attempt to ban machine guns was in the 1930s. And I think that worked up till today. But again, if I'm wrong about that, let me know. All right. We've got Ken back from Gillette, Illinois. And then I've got a couple other callers, Tom and Joe, that I'll get to in a minute. But let me get back to Ken because, Ken, you were telling me that you have an AK-47 for self-defense, even though you recognize that your daughter scared away a burglar with one or two shots from a pistol. So why do you think the AK-47 is necessary? Do you think a burglar would keep charging at you even if you did a shot in the air?
You know, if he came in with a gun.
Okay, and why would I guess just to steal stuff, he comes in with a gun? And so you have to have a gun battle. Well, now, if you could have an AK-47, then surely the burglar could have an AK-47, right?
Yeah, that's possible.
Okay, so if you have an AK-47 and he has an AK-47, I don't know he'll win first. I mean, presumably the burglar will be more aware that he's in your house before you know he's in your house. I don't know where it all stops. I mean, soon you can have grenade launchers, and that might take him out. But I mean, I think more people are likely to die in crossfire, don't you?
I've got my pit bull dog trained to go after the hand with the gun that comes through the door.
Okay.
You know,
well, good for you. I mean, that's fine. I think the pit bull and your pistol are enough. I really don't think you need the AK-47.
I'd like to ask you a question, if I might.
Go ahead.
Are you saying that all these guns should be confiscated like they were in Australia?
You know, the way the assault weapons ban worked before from 1994 to 2004 is they weren't manufactured anymore. They weren't transferred anymore. Prior owners could keep them. I think that's probably the safest way of doing it, and eventually they die out. That's kind of the way machine guns were done in the 30s, so I support that model.
Machine guns, what they did with machine guns is they put a $300 tax on them. You had to have a federal
machine gun license. I'm fine with that, too. I'm fine with very high taxes on them, and all the taxes should go to the victims. Let's tax each one of them $5,000. I'm fine with that.
You know who the most law-abiding people in the United States are? They're holders of federal machine gun licenses. Nobody has ever been killed by a holder of a federal machine gun license. Now they don't issue any new ones. That was what that last law did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the point, is that if you're a cop or you're a military and you're trained and you know how to use these things and you're well-regulated, I'm fine with it. But I think the fact that a crazy 20-year-old can get a gun is not good.
You know, you keep thinking of the cops as being good people.
Well, they're bad cops, too, but at least they're surrounded by other cops with guns who could take down the bad
cops. You know, no, listen to me. You know, when I worked in Northern Illinois as a prosecutor, we had one cop that killed two black men that supposedly made firm gestures, you know.
Okay.
And he did ask him for their driver's license, you know.
Yep. And I would want that cop to go to jail. Absolutely.
Well, they, you know, the both cases were washed out in the grand jury, as you might expect.
I wouldn't expect that. I would hope you could put that guy away.
You get real. You know, that cops don't get prosecuted in this country for killing black people or Mexicans.
Well, they should, and I'm all for it when it happens, and I'm against that kind of violence
now,
when it happens by any cop. I'm sorry, Ken, it's another break, but I'll tell you what. You just came back. I will give you time after this break. 888-653-7543, and then on to Tom, Joe, and Reggie right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. I want to finish up with Ken and Jolette, and then I've got to get to Tom and Joe and Reggie. So, Ken, go ahead. Make your last best argument. As I understand what you're saying, is that because they're bad cops, that we should make sure that everybody's armed, and that way we could stop the bad cops? See, my problem with this argument is this idea.
Have you ever had the police come in your house?
Have I ever had the police? Yes. Yes, I have.
I had them come to my house one time. My teenage daughter and teenage son got into an argument, and a girlfriend of the teenage daughter calls the police. So when I took the daughter out of the house, basically just to calm things down, and I come back and I see cops coming up on my house.
Okay.
Okay. Now, like I said, you know, my kids aren't white. Okay.
Right.
Now, I go in there, and I get, you know, between the cops and the stairway, okay, that leads upstairs to where my son is. And this rookie cop, you know, says, get out of the, you know, we're in. I said, you know, you want to search my house, you go get a warrant, you know. And he says, well, I'm already in. I can do what I want, you know.
Well, cops are allowed in emergency circumstances to enter a house without a warrant.
There was no emergency.
Well, they were called. They were told that there was an argument.
They were called, and the girl that was supposedly, you know, having the problem was sitting outside in the car. Okay?
All right.
And I had this rookie cop in my face telling me, you know, that I'm going to get arrested for resisting arrest if I let him go upstairs. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I said, you better call downtown before you arrest an assistant state's attorney. So he did call downtown, and they sent an experienced officer up there. Because upstairs, my son had that whole arsenal laid out, and this was before the ban on armor-piercing bullets. So he had them all loaded up with armor-piercing bullets, ready to take out whoever came up those stairs.
I think that's extremely dangerous, Ken. I think your son and you, maybe, for allowing your son to do this, I think you're a danger. I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. To the idea that your kid would shoot cops for coming up the stairs, he knows they're police officers. You may disagree whether they have a legal right to be there. You could take them to court. You could sue them. You can call their bosses. You can get their badge numbers. You can complain to the police commission. But you don't gun them down. No, you don't. And he doesn't. And if your son did that, I hope they'd put him and you away for a very long time.
I managed to defuse the situation.
Well, thank God you did. But that's the problem with having those kinds of guns and armor-piercing bullets in the hand of your teenage son.
Well,
I'm sorry. I completely disagree with you.
Armor-piercing bullets are gone now. Because
thank God for that. Because of sensible people wanting gun control. That's right. And I would ban hollow-point bullets as well. Wow, Ken. I'm sorry. You and I thought we were reaching reasonable points. But with that, we firmly disagree. But I do thank you for calling in.
Well,
Let me get in some other callers
thank
here.
Thank you for listening to me.
My pleasure, sir. And I just got to say, I really think that having those kinds of guns in your house, look. So the guy has non-white children. So what? What, 28% of Americans or so are non-white? So, I mean, you're a prosecutor. I understand why prosecutors would fear violence. That makes sense. Criminals are more out to get prosecutors. I understand why prosecutors might want guns more than anyone else. But this guy, who has his son loaded with armor-piercing bullets, ready to take out cops. If you don't think a cop is lawfully in your house, you know, call 911, call the police themselves and say this cop is, you know, sue them. But you're trying to take out a police force? Are you kidding me? The only people who should take out a... No one should take out a police force. I'm sorry. If a police force is that crooked, then go to a judge and get a warrant and send the army out after them. But don't send your 15-year-old with an AK-47 to take out a police force. Oh, my God. Wow. If that is the kind of person that has an AK-47 in America, that gives me even more reason to ban them. Okay. All right. I'll calm down and talk to Tom from West Virginia, who thinks I'm firing from the hip, line four. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I hope you're not going to defend what Ken just said.
Oh, no. I just want some clarification. Maybe I could shed some light.
Okay.
I've been in the military for 14 years.
Okay.
I've been an avid hunter and sportsman for several years as
okay.
well.
Right.
You're using a lot of lingo, not really providing a lot of clarification, such as
okay.
military-grade, assault weapons,
right.
those kinds of guns. Ken just used the term armor-piercing bullets. All those, they all sound like good sound bites. There's very little substance behind them. I mean, for example, what makes a weapon a military-grade weapon?
Well, I'm using that because I use that term because the Bushmaster 223, which was used in the Sandy Hook massacre, was first designed for Vietnam. It's a semi-automatic assault weapon that can shoot 45 to 60 rounds a minute and was designed for the military. To me, that makes it military grade. You may have some other definition, but that's why I use that. Go ahead.
No, actually, the AR-15 was designed in the late 50s by a gentleman named Eugene Stoner of Armalite that was actually marketed as a civilian weapon, or actually really a sporting arm, and it was later marketed to the Air Force and basically later spread to the entire military through the course of the 1960s. It actually predated Vietnam by several years.
I was talking about the Bushmaster 223 is what I was talking about.
Was that?
I was talking about the weapon used in the Sandy Hook massacre.
The Bushmaster. Bushmaster is a company I don't think has been around before the 70s or 80s.
Listen, I'm not an expert either. The research I did showed that it was drowned in Vietnam. But look, the point is that these are the kinds of weapons that belong in the hands of the military. Again, I'm not trying to take it from your hands or other people in the military. I'm not trying to take it from police. But I am trying to take it from people outside the military, outside police, outside people who have a reason to have these weapons. So we don't get in the kind of situation where Ken's teenage son is ready to take down an American police force. I mean,
how does a Bushmaster 223 differ from any regular civilian hunting weapon?
It's a semi-automatic
civilian hunting weapon. A 223 is a very common varmint cartridge. I mean, that's what it was originally designed for.
It's not the cartridge.
Small, medium game.
No, it's not the cartridge. It's the
okay.
fact that it's hollow point bullets. And the fact that it shoots more than 10 rounds in a clip. And apparently the Bushmaster, from what I read, can shoot 45 to 60 rounds a minute.
An automatic weapon would shoot 45 to 60 rounds a minute. And a semi-automatic weapon does not have that kind of a cyclic rate. I mean, really, it's as fast as the shooter can pull the trigger.
Right.
But,
I can move my finger 60 times in a minute. I can move it more than once a second. So if I can move my finger more than once a second, I can shoot a bullet more than once a second with a semi-automatic.
Well, looking at it from your perspective, then, you know, we may as well go after bolt action rifles because a bolt action can fire, you know, infinitely fast. I mean, depending on how fast you can cycle that bolt and pull the trigger. I mean, granted, I don't know anybody that can cycle a bolt and pull the trigger that quickly.
But that's my point.
There's no.
But that's important
to the rate of fire there.
Look, the Aurora Killer had 100 round magazines, and he only stopped killing because his gun jammed. The killer in Arizona, the guy who shot Gabby Gifford, all right,
uh-huh.
he had 30 bullet magazines. He had several of them. He shot 30 out. He shot a dozen people or so. He shot Gabby Giffords through the head, and it took him 5 seconds or so to switch the magazines. And in those 5 seconds, two extremely brave people tackled him and prevented another 30 people's lives from being lost. My argument is that the law that existed in 2004 that said if you're not in the military, you're not a cop, you can't have magazines more than 10 bullets, that 10 bullets are more than sufficient for any hunter or any non-police officer interested in self-defense. Don't you agree?
Well, I agree from a personal level. I disagree by principle.
What's the principle?
Let's look at it from another perspective. Instead of saying, why do you need a 30-round magazine, but, you know, what would you consider to be a reasonable limit to
10.
The number of rounds a weapon
10.
Can hold?
10's my reasonable limit. It exists in the
okay.
assault weapons ban. I'm okay with 10.
Why, why, What makes you stop at 10? Why not?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind 9 or 11. I'm not going to say 10 is magical, but I think at some point a weapon becomes used more for murder than for self-defense, and I think 10 is a reasonable point. If you ask me, would I support 8 or 12? Yeah, I'd support 8 or 12, but
now,
I think 30 is too much.
Let's look at this. I mean, you know, a magazine, especially in, for example, the Bushmaster 223. Yeah, the magazine is actually separate from the rifle.
Right.
I'm not sure if you're aware of the crime bill. You know, obviously the 1994 crime bill, the so-called assault weapons ban on that.
Right.
Part of what Dianne Feinstein added to that to make it more palatable to sportsmen were a whole slew of quote-unquote protected sporting arms.
Well, you can have shotgun, for example. You shoot more than 10 bullets out of a shotgun. No one's going to complain about bird pellets.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
Now, a few of these so-called protected sporting arms also had 30-round magazines.
I want to be clear here. I know the assault weapons ban from 94 to 2004 was not perfect. I know that. I wouldn't exactly copy it. If I were writing the legislation, I would ban any a gun that shot more than 10 rounds without having to change the magazine. Now, again, if you want to shoot 100 rounds at a target, you shoot 10, you use 5 seconds, you change the magazine, you shoot 10 more. I'm fine with that. But that 5 seconds to me is crucial to distinguish the lawful gun owner from the guy who's just trying to kill people. So, I don't think I'm being that restrictive of somebody in target practice.
Would it be more rational to put limits on magazine size and just stick with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I agree with it, but I consider it more rational.
You know what, sir?
Creating a new class of weapons based on cosmetic appearance.
I'll tell you what, Tom. If you and I can get together and you can convince your congressman in West Virginia, of all places, if you can convince your elected officials to just simply stop magazines at 10, we would come a long, long way towards sensible gun control in America. That alone would be a terrific, terrific step forward. I'm fine with that.
According to a noted criminal, Gary Kleck, I believe, is who it was, there was a study. Now, this was back in the 80s. I can't imagine a whole lot's really changed since then. But the average number of rounds fired in a typical shootout is 2.4.
Okay.
Far less than that 10 or that 15 or
right.
that 20, whatever.
Right. Exactly. So you don't. 30, right.
These are anomalies.
Exactly.
We really, you know, these are not a typical.
That's true. But if you walk into a schoolhouse in Newtown, Connecticut, and you can only shoot 10 rounds before you have to change, and that gives a teacher time enough to jump on you and maybe, you know, risk her life, but stop you for the police. I mean, listen, it's tough. But at least we know that in Arizona, we know that the capacity of the magazine is the reason why Gabby Giffords is still alive today and why dozens of people in Arizona are alive today. I'm glad to hear that you, a responsible gun owner, can agree with me on limiting high-capacity magazines. So I'll take that, and I got to go take a break and get to other callers. Thank you, though. I appreciate your call, Tom. 888-653-7543. When we come back, Joe and Reggie. Let's talk about guns. This is Mark Levine, back after this. Welcome back. This is Mark Levine. I got about, 8 or 9 minutes left, so I don't have a lot of time, and I have three callers, Joe, Reggie, and Sean. So I'm going to do something that I sometimes do when I run out of time. I'm going to hear from all three of you. I'm not going to comment back, though, until I've heard from all three, and then I'll respond to all three of you because I want to give each of you a chance to say your piece. So, Joe, driving to Washington, D.C., where I am right now, line one, say your piece. Go ahead.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Joe.
You know, you were talking about the difference between cars and guns. I mean, on a superficial level, the main difference is, it doesn't seem like you should have to have government's permission to exercise a constitutional right. And that's what, you know, keeping and bearing arms is.
Versus okay.
a car, which is something completely different.
All right. I'm going to respond to you, but I'm going to listen to all three callers first. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Reggie in Decatur. Hi, Reggie. What's your thoughts?
How you doing, Mark?
Hey, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, you have some of these radical right-wing radio talk show hosts, like such as Dana Loesch, who herself has, owns, and wields an AR-15 in her house, in her home, around her two young sons.
Yikes.
And you can't say assault weapons around them because they get repulsively very ill, and they scream bloody murder, and their heads explode. And to them, it's an imaginary made-up term made up by people who know absolutely nothing about weapons or firearms. To them, it's an imaginary made-up term by people who know nothing about firearms. That's what they say.
And it's awfully dangerous around children.
Yes, it is.
Thank you for your point, Reggie. I'll respond to you, too, but I want to hear from Sean first. Sean in Hawaii. Go ahead and make your point about guns.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say I was listening when the military guy called up. And
yeah.
He was trying, this is a person who has much more information than you do as far as the weapons being used. And he was trying to educate you on that type of weapon and why it should not, it's not really classified as an assault rifle. Assault rifle's been banned since 1934. An assault rifle, by the military's standard definition, is a select fire weapon, which means you can shoot automatic or semi-automatic.
Right, that's an assault rifle. An assault weapon, as defined in the 1994 Act, is a semi-automatic weapon. Right?
Well, you can't just go and redefine it and say that the government can redefine it when
Definitions come from all kinds of sources. I'm not disputing your definition of assault rifle. I use the term assault weapon because that's the term used in the 1994 Act as defined by Congress. You're right that that's how the military defined an assault rifle. My point is, apart from the definitions, I think these guns with high-capacity magazines do more harm than good and should not be in the hands of people outside the military and police. That's my point. Well, you're saying because I cited the congressional definition rather than the Army definition, how does that affect the argument about whether these things are good for America or not?
Would you like to hear what I have to say?
Yeah.
All I'm trying to say is I would like it if you would let the person who knows more than you on the subject get their piece in before you interrupt them and tell them what they're supposed to be thinking.
I didn't tell Tom what he was supposed to be thinking. Tom and I agreed that high-capacity magazines have no necessary use outside of the military and police, and I agreed with him, and I was glad to get that agreement from him.
The thing is you're taking the argument into the realm of the Second Amendment has everything to do with hunting, and it doesn't really have anything to do with hunting.
You're right about that, and actually that gives me a good segue to respond to Joe as well. So thank you for your call, and I will do that. So let's talk about the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the full Second Amendment. For 230 years, the Supreme Court read the Second Amendment as it was written. A well-regulated militia be necessary to secure a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, to understand the Second Amendment, you need to understand, of course, its context, where it came from. The founders did not support a standing army. In fact, in the Constitution, you can't have an army unless every 2 years you reauthorize it. If you forget to reauthorize it, guess what? You have no army. Because the founders were afraid of a standing army. There's the Third Amendment, which says that you can't quarter soldiers in your home. Why? Because the British had a standing army, and the founders were very scared of that. So given that the founders were against a standing army, they understood that sometimes local people need to get together in well-regulated militias to fight off bad guys, whether that be the British or the French or Native Americans fighting for their land. Whatever it is, well-regulated militias are part of our early history, and we still have them today. They're called National Guards. Every one of the states and D.C. has a National Guard, which is a well-regulated militia. The Second Amendment protects well-regulated militias, and I agree with that, and I don't think we need to change the Second Amendment. Then there comes the question of an individual right to bear arms. Now, that's not in the Second Amendment. In fact, whenever the amendments in the Bill of Rights want to refer to individuals, they use the word persons. You'll hear about persons. The law on search and seizures says that you can't search persons or that persons have rights against self-incrimination because those are individual rights. When it comes to collective rights, they call it people. In other words, the right of a militia or the right of religion to practice. That's a collective right. Right? You don't have an individual right to make up your own religion and practice, but if you belong to an established religion as a group, you can do that. For 230 years, the United States Supreme Court said that the Second Amendment protects the right of militias, well-regulated militias, to keep and bear arms, which I think it does. But this idea that it gives it right to an individual, well, no one felt that was true until 2010. When five people on the Supreme Court overturned 200-plus years of jurisprudence to say, yep, you got the right to own guns, but we, the Supreme Court, can tell you which guns you can own and which guns you can't own because, well, Justice Scalia says, I'm wiser than all you Americans using democracy. Let me tell you something. If the Second Amendment means that every person has the right to keep and bear any arms they choose, then every crazy man has a right to have a nuclear weapon. If you believe the Second Amendment protects individual rights to own anything, well, that's, I mean, you can believe that. I happen to believe that the founders meant what they said, and when they said a well-regulated militia may be necessary to the security of a free state, they didn't just write those things because they were playing around. They meant what they said. The Second Amendment does not say a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, period. The right of individual persons to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period. No, it says that the right of a well-regulated militia is there. So Scalia changed his mind, but you see what the Supreme Court did? They said, you, the American people, are too stupid to know which guns to ban, and because we can't take the Second Amendment to say that every individual has a right to every arm, every four-year-old has a right to a nuclear bomb, every crazy man has a right to arsenic and sarin gas. What did they do? They said, we're going to decide. Well, I say in democracy, the people should decide. Ban some guns, don't ban some other guns. But this is not up to Justice Scalia. It's up to us, the American people. I wish I had more time. That's all the time I've got. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. My website is marklevinetalk.com.